This is the Flight Bridge Ed Podcast, critical care and emergency medicine education for nurses and paramedics. Here's your host, Eric Bauer.
Hey everybody, Eric with you. Today we're going to do a quick podcast on a disease process called VAP. And VAP is something that I had been asked to talk about recently, and I started thinking about how important this education is. We don't really think about stuff like this. You know, we're in the middle of a nasty call, whether it's a scene flight, a pre-hospital run on an ambulance. We've got a really sick patient, and we don't really think about long-term effects of our care. And just like I've talked about in many other podcasts, there are things that we do as clinicians, even though we have the best intentions, that cause further harm to our patients, and that it really does increase morbidity and mortality. So as I presented this lecture, I started thinking about how important this education is. And so that's why I'm bringing it to the podcast, is I think it's a quick podcast. It's something we can think about, always take into consideration when we're dealing with our patients. So VAP is called ventilator-associated pneumonia, and essentially this is pneumonia that has occurred 48 hours or within 48 hours post-intubation, and this is the leading cause of death from healthcare-acquired illness in the ICU. So that's a big statement. There's been a few studies recently. I will put those in the show notes. They both showed approximately a 20% incidence in VAP in ED-associated intubations. And the other study was 22% of trauma patients intubated in the ED developed VAP. So that's a huge number. So let's kind of discuss what VAP is, how we can fix that issue, and we'll look at the different aspects of just good care and how we can maybe lower that incidence. So the first thing is VAP is essentially a bacterial pathogen. You have a colonization of aerobic pathogens that are always in our mouth. Regardless of how healthy we are, we have these bacteria. And in an intubated patient, or I should say in a patient that has a decompensation of their airway, they have a lot of secretions that are sitting in the back of their glottic opening. So their subglottic opening has secretions in it. And we, while performing our airway management techniques, we need to think about how that happens as far as aspiration. And we're not talking about massive aspiration. Obviously, I've talked in other podcasts, aspiration in of itself increases morbidity and mortality up to 50%. So we always have to take that in consideration when we're dealing with our advanced airway procedures. Are we protecting their airway? And even though they may be maintaining their airway, can they protect our airway 15 minutes from now or 30 minutes from now? So we always need to take that into consideration when determining if we're going to RSI and manage their airway with advanced procedures. So we have that colonization of aerobic pathogens sitting in the subglottic area. We have all these secretions. We need to take that into consideration. We need to always suction our patients thoroughly prior to any intubation attempt. But because we have this colonization of aerobic pathogens, we also have a reduction of saliva, so salivary flow. This promotes a concept called dissitation. And dissitation is a concept or a definition essentially that says you have dryness. You have decreased saliva. You have decreased flow of antimicrobials that are found in the saliva. So you have an inability to fight that bacteria. And you also have, you know, this huge amount of secretions that are located in that subglottic area. So you have a potential of microaspiration. Even if you have an intubated patient already and you're just transferring them, you have to think about, you have very, very small bacteria. And even if we have a cuff that's inflated correctly, you're going to have microsecretions that are potentially hazardous and that can form around that ET tube cuff, that balloon, and seep in and be forced down into the lungs. So we have to prevent this. We have to attempt to prevent this. And there's a lot of different ways that we can do this. The big concept here is what's called a bundle. And for you, those of you out there that are paramedics, you probably had never heard of this. I had never heard of this. A nursing bundle is something that is multiple things that we do that will prevent or lower the incidence of an event. And that doesn't have to just be VAP, it can be anything. So it's been shown in the hospital setting that these things that I'll discuss have drastically reduced the incidence of VAP. The first thing we have to think about is anytime we intubate our patients, prior to intubation, they have to be suctioned. So you suction that oral pharynx, you suction that subglottic area. You perform your intubation, right? Every time that you have an attempt, you need to make sure you resuction. If you are having multiple attempts, you need to make sure that we're utilizing that passive oxygenation technique. That's going to also lower the incidence. If we're constantly bagging our patient, we're going to force those secretions that are forming that subglottic area down into the lungs. Once we get that patient intubated, we want to take the time and we want to protect that airway. So we want to make sure that cuff is inflated correctly. We want to suction that ET tube immediately. We want to elevate the head at least 15 degrees. Even if you don't have a trauma patient, you also want to apply a C-collar. Applying a C-collar to any intubated patient helps protect that airway. It doesn't allow that ET tube to be moved around, doesn't allow the head to be moved around, and that's going to limit any movement, and any movement that's limited is going to, in turn, lower the incidence of any microaspiration. Taking the time to do those things are really going to help. So in the pre-hospital setting, we can really make a big difference just by making sure we perform good suctioning techniques, that we're assessing the need for suctioning often. An important thing about VAP is 43.5% or nearly half of the patients intubated in the ED who stay intubated longer than 48 hours will develop VAP. So that's a huge thing. That's why we see these open heart surgery patients, these patients that have just had these massive surgery events. They do whatever they can to remove the ET tube or any indwelling catheters that don't need to be there within hours after. They try to get them off the ventilator as soon as possible because they realize that hospitals in and of itself have a huge amount of bacteria floating around. So they need to try to lower the incidence by getting that ET tube out as quickly as possible. If these patients are intubated longer than 48 hours and they're in the ICU, real high incidence of VAP, and that obviously increases ICU stays, increases morbidity and mortality. Again, when we look at air medical transport, when we look at pre-hospital transport, we play a huge role in this whole process. We have to remember that we're not just treating acute situations, but that our care completely can alter and change a patient's clinical course. So we have to remember that we're not there just to save a life then and there, but we can make a huge difference in if they live and die just by simple things like making sure we suction our patients before we intubate, making sure we continually suction our patients often. And once they're intubated, that doesn't mean we just suction our ET tube, but we suction that oral pharynx. That's going to limit that micro secretions from even forming around that ET tube cuff. When we look at other things that can relate to higher incidence of VAP, when we're performing our RSI procedure, improper dosing of our intubation medications. Just that in and of itself, when we don't perform good RSI procedures, if we don't give our pain management dose of fentanyl prior, if we don't pick the correct induction agent like ketamine or etomidate, and we attempt to intubate before we even give a paralytic, that actually increases the incidence of VAP. Well, why? If you think about intubating a patient, and you know this used to be kind of an old adage, is we're going to intubate with the least amount of medications possible. But I can tell you that all of the studies have shown that your first pass success is always better when performing full RSI. That's giving an induction agent and a paralytic both. If you've ever seen a person intubated with no paralytic, even if they've been given an induction agent like etomidate or Versed or ketamine, and they're gagging and they're fighting against that laryngoscope, well, what's that doing? I guarantee you they're forming secretions. They've got a lot of secretions in their lower airway. in their subglottic area, they're sucking all that down into their lungs. You've just increased their morbidity and mortality by 50%. So take the extra time, take that extra minute and a half and give a paralytic, whether it sucks or rock, and be that advocate for your patients. The last thing, and one of the most important things that I think is missed all the time, is place an OG or NG tube. Don't forget to do this. This is so important. Take the time, once you've secured that ET tube, you've put that commercial device, you've marked where that ET tube is at the teeth, you've placed them on the ventilator, you've confirmed capnography, place an NG or OG tube. Huge, huge thing, guys. So we can really make a difference. We really can reduce the incidence of VAP in the pre-hospital setting. Not only are we looking at this from a morbidity and mortality thing, but we all have to remember that our jobs are completely related to our company's ability to reimburse. And a lot of these insurance companies nowadays are looking at how the provider, how the agency that transported the patient, what steps did they take to improve outcomes? And those things have to be documented. And these insurance companies will find anything to deny a claim. And that's becoming a big, big thing. So again, take the extra time. Think about what type of care you're giving and how it's going to improve their clinical course. Don't just think acutely, but think hours, days from now. Think about it as your mom, your dad, your child. And wouldn't it be terrible if they survived a massive traumatic event, but they had died from associated pneumonia? So that's all I have. I appreciate everybody listening. I thank everybody for all the kind words and for the great emails. We're going to keep putting out podcasts every week. If you haven't already, go to our YouTube channel. We've been very pleased with the response. We've got, I think, 138 subscribers at this point in the first 5 weeks, so that's great. I think we've seen about 25,000 views. I'll be posting videos every week, and again, if you have any great cases that you want me to present as far as the Nightmare series, I'd love to hear them. I've got quite a few in the bank right now to look at, and again, if you need any help with anything, have any questions clinically, just feel free to email me, eric.bauer@flightbridgehead.com, and we will talk to you soon.
This has been a production of the Flight Bridge Ed Podcast, leading the way in pre-hospital critical care and emergency medicine education.